Welcome back to the Nexus Podcast. Greg Garcia is my guest today. Greg is the Executive Director of the Healthcare and Public Health Sector Coordinating Council's Cybersecurity Working Group. Greg has had a long career on the policy side of cybersecurity and was the first presidentially appointed Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity at the Department of Homeland Security. For today, the Change Healthcare ransomware attack is on our agenda. Gregor and I are going to catch up on the attack, its impact, and where we are in terms of recovery across the industry. We're also going to talk about the HSCC's recently published five-year health industry cybersecurity strategic plan. It lays out some necessary direction to put this critical infrastructure sector on its feet in terms of protecting critical systems and ultimately improving patient care, which is the most important goal. Before I bring in Greg, I want to remind you to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. We are on everyone's favorite platform, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. It's the best way to support the show and truly appreciate everyone listening and the support. It's great. So thanks again for all the support and for listening to every show. With that, let's bring in Greg and kick off the episode. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Good, Michael. How are you?
Good, thanks. I appreciate you coming on. I know this is, I'm sure, a hectic time for you and everybody around you.
Indeed it is. But, you know, when we've got a big team working on it together, we're much more motivated.
Sure. Before we get into the discussion, maybe tell us a little bit about the work you're doing with the Cybersecurity Working Group, with the Health Sector Coordinating Council, and what you, maybe your day-to-day is kind of like.
Yeah, great. Great question. Well, you know, to start off with, I mean, what is a Sector Coordinating Council? There are 17 Sector Coordinating Councils, each one dedicated to a designated critical infrastructure sector. So healthcare is critical infrastructure. Just like electricity and telecommunications and financial services and oil and gas, everything that the public depends upon. And so we have a long 20-year history of a policy foundation that recognizes these critical sectors and recognizes that because these sectors are primarily owned and operated by private industry, it's up to us to organize ourselves around identifying and mitigating these threats and to do it with government as a public-private partnership. So that is at the heart of what the Health Sector Coordinating Council does, is partnership with government and ourselves to do that risk analysis and preparedness activities that will make us stronger, more secure, and more resilient. And so mm-hmm. The Cybersecurity Working Group is 400 plus organizations, about 1,000 people working, representing them. And I'm talking about across the healthcare spectrum, whether it is the health providers, the payers, the medical technology companies, the pharmaceuticals, or the health IT. We're trying to work on those cybersecurity threats, vulnerabilities that are cross-cutting in nature. So, you know, the day-to-day work here is that we are, you know, we are organized into task groups that are focusing on some very specific cybersecurity functions, and developing the best practices for them, whether it's, you know, we got to do better at medical device security. We have to do better at information sharing and incident response. What about workforce development or third-party supply chain resiliency? These are the kinds of things that health organizations need to deal with every day. So we're trying to take the best of what our member organizations have to offer and develop these guidances, these toolkits, and they are by the sector for the sector. So that's mm-hmm. The strength of it is that we're bringing the best of what we all have to offer, not just government regulation.
You know, the more that I learn about healthcare and cybersecurity, the complexity is unreal. The dependencies here and there and everywhere. It seems to be such an insurmountable task, and I'm glad that there are a lot of people really focusing on it now.
Yeah, it's exactly right, Michael. The interdependencies and the interconnectedness of this industry that is so digitized, so electronically connected over networks and the internet and wireless, that opens up a lot of vulnerabilities, a lot. It expands the attack surface, if you will. So that just makes our job exponentially greater.
Right. All right. So I mentioned the strategic plan in the introduction, and I definitely want to get to that as we get through the conversation. But in reading it the last few days, the phrase that sticks out, which is cyber safety is patient safety, it's pretty prominent. It's spelled out as a guiding principle of the strategic plan. And I've seen it used across the industry. I think the first time I saw it was in Senator Warner's paper, probably 2 years ago now, maybe even longer than that. It's a pretty powerful message. I mean, how effective is it to you? I mean, do you see it that way as kind of like this mantra for the industry?
Oh, absolutely. And because it speaks to multiple audiences, of course it speaks to the CISOs, because the chief information security officers and the product security officers, are organized around this principle because they know they are on the hook for ensuring the security and integrity of data, of systems, of technology. And ultimately, those are data systems and technology that will touch a patient in some way or mm-hmm. a patient's data. That message, we believe, is beginning to resonate more and more on the clinical side. When, in the past, not just in healthcare, but in any other sector, you have the people running the business. In our case, it's the clinicians and the administrative offices of health providers. They just think security is the IT security person's job. Don't bother sure. me with that. It's not. Yep. I have patients to take care of. Yes, you do. And you know that some of your patients are not going to be cared for if you're unable to access their medical records, if that medical device is corrupted and not working, if your scheduling system has been taken down, you can't see patients. So this is the nexus between cybersecurity and clinical care. And clinicians need to understand that as well, because they feel that every single day. So I think that mm-hmm. I think it resonates. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, until I really started seeing it regularly, I kind of admit, I don't think I made that connection, but it's pretty obvious, especially as we're connecting everything. And this applies across the board, not just healthcare. But yeah, I think it's a powerful message, and I'm glad.
Well, and also, I mean, I think we certainly animated that among the 27 documents that we've published is one that is not a document. It is a video training series. It's called Cybersecurity for the Clinician. It is a series of 8 videos, about 6 minutes each, so just under an hour. And it is simply, this is everything that you need to know as a clinician, as a nurse, as a doctor, as a surgeon. You need to know that you have, like it or not, you have some cybersecurity responsibility as well, because you are touching the patient and data and technology. And yep. some of the biggest vulnerabilities are right through the frontline user. So this is a video series that is hosted by an emergency room doctor from UC San Diego, who also, before he went to medical school, is a self-trained hacker. So, you know, there is no better authority to talk about the connection between cybersecurity and patient care mm-hmm. than Dr. Christian Demeff.
All right. So that is a pretty good transition into the topic for today, with just the Change Healthcare attack. I don't think we need to recap it too deeply. I mean, it's been pretty well covered in the news, and discussions are everywhere about this ransomware attack, and Change Healthcare being one of the big payment processors, and kind of this, I've seen you describe it and others, as kind of like this choke point in the industry. What's your perspective on this attack from an industry and even a policy standpoint? Like, what does it demonstrate about the targeting of healthcare or just kind of the overall vulnerability of the sector?
Well, you really introduced that topic right at the top, Michael, and that is the interconnectedness and the complexity of the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to refer to it as the plumbing of the healthcare infrastructure. We all know about the big hospitals, and we know about the big medical device and pharmaceutical companies and the payers. But there is this whole underlying infrastructure of services and communications and software that is really running, or at least enabling, the healthcare industry and patient care and, yes, the entire payment system. And so a lot of these key utilities that underlie the healthcare infrastructure are sort of unknown. You know, but before this happened, how many people in a hospital actually knew what Change Healthcare is?
Right.
They just knew that they submitted reimbursement claims and onto their keyboard, or prescriptions. But they didn't know the actual service and the software that was enabling that. So that is, you know, sort of one of the major wake-up calls that we had from the Change Healthcare attack, is that mm-hmm. we really need to get a better understanding of, you know, pull up the floorboards and what does that plumbing look like? And where are the leaks and where are the joints in the pipes that we need to understand?
Right.
Because if we don't know what that blueprint looks like, and of course it isn't static, it's always changing, it's dynamic, new entrants into the healthcare industry, new innovative technology and services. But at least we need to get the overall skeletal structure of this and think about or assess what are those, you use the right term, the choke points. What are those low redundancy, no redundancy services that, if disrupted in any significant way, like Change Healthcare, that it will have rippling effects across the ecosystem in a way that's ultimately going to impact patient care.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what's your sense in terms of where we are in terms of recovery? What are you hearing from folks that you're connected to? I mean, I'm sure a lot of places maybe had to consider going back to manual processes or this really stressed kind of disaster recovery plans that maybe hadn't been tested in a while or were a little dusty. Just where do you think we are in terms of recovery right now?
That's a key question. You know, it's what else have we learned about this? And two things come to mind, and that is about half of the attacks, cyber attacks that happen on the healthcare industry are through third parties, through business associates or other software and technology services such as Change Healthcare. And to some extent, we don't have ultimate control as a user, except that if we were to have a more mature, more deliberate third-party supply chain risk management capability, every healthcare organization needs to have that. And that is a weak point. That is a weakness in our preparedness arsenal. And the other realization is that in terms of recovery, as you're asking, Michael, is we don't have enough really solid and practiced recovery plans or incident response operational continuity plans, such that we can more quickly recover from such an event. You mentioned, I think, going to paper. Well, that's an interesting thing. Going to paper. Let's just go to paper. med students of today, they don't actually even know how, they don't graduate knowing how to write a prescription with a pen and a pad of paper. It's all online, yep, on a computer through the EMR. Paper backups. Well, that's good in theory. So this we need to redouble our efforts at really getting a handle on third-party risk management and getting a handle on what we call right of the boom. You know, the boom is the incident, and to the right of that is what we do to respond and to recover.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts on some of the long-term impacts that you envision here? I mean, the short terms may be pretty obvious by now, but long-term, what are we going to see out of this?
Well, you know, I think this administration is going to double down on its seriousness about the need for all the technology and software providers to sort of rethink secure by design, secure by default in everything they do. It is hard to have, you know, a single software program that is going to interoperate cleanly and uniformly across all unique critical infrastructure applications. It's very difficult, and we should never underestimate that. But there does need to be a stronger culture of security, and we have seen from this administration the imperative that we take this seriously, whether it's the security of Internet of Things devices in one of the executive orders, or the or the national cyber strategy that came from the Office of the National Cyber Director a couple of years ago, which really pushes on that notion that, you know, users of technology, whether they're providers or pharmaceuticals or what have you, the burden of security should not be so heavily laid at their doorstep. I mean, it is a shared responsibility, no doubt about that. But there remains, I think, some gap that needs to be filled. So the longer term impact is, I think, one of both public policy and I think necessarily one of market demand, that more and more the users of technology have to coalesce around understandings of what it means to require uniform security by their technology and software vendors.
Mm-hmm. Just to touch on your secure by design point there, I mean, just to be devil's advocate, healthcare is pretty ripe with legacy technology and organizations being very unwilling to either rip and replace or spend to upgrade. I mean, that might be easier said than done. And, you know, the secure stuff, I guess that's where secure by default may come in terms of locking down configurations and patching when possible, et cetera.
Yeah. We are dealing with this issue in a number of task groups. It is sort of the circular finger pointing between the medical device companies and the health providers, that the health providers are telling the medical device manufacturers, quit sending us technology that is based on two generations ago of an operating system. Give us something that is secure out of the box. And the medical device guys will say, yes, we are working on that. It is a longer term life cycle retooling process. But by the way, hospitals, you need to fix your cyber hygiene and you need to clean up your password policies and better training of your employees and clinicians. And so out of that conversation really does, and I think it has shown, it has manifested in the cyber working group, that there is a mutual understanding of shared responsibility. And that simply passing the buck is not going to work. So yes, secure by design and by default, but also the recognition that the providers, that the users do have some responsibility as well. Because yes, you cannot have security for one and security for all with a snap of your fingers. It's mm-hmm. it is one of our goals. It is one of our goals in the strategic plan that really calls on active partnership between the users and the providers of technology to have an ongoing dialogue about how to maintain security against all kinds of evolving innovations, vulnerabilities, and threats.
I want to go back to it for a second to the point about organizations like Change Healthcare being a choke point and just being this plumbing, this infrastructure that is so pivotal to the industry and the reach that these types of companies have. Is anyone mapping out what these critical healthcare nodes, if you will, what they are, and these types of services that are, if they're attacked, can just cripple so many other things? I mean, does a mapping like that make sense? To kind of identify these top of the food chain targets? Who does it? Am I oversimplifying here?
First of all, it is coming. You have put your finger on the key point here. We have begun discussions with HHS, with CISA, that this mapping needs to take place. And the Sector Coordinating Council is the convening mechanism within industry to bring that level of advice and infrastructure insight, if you will, to help inform what needs to be a government coordinated initiative to do that mapping. But beyond the mapping, then is the necessity to assign risk. So I, by way of example, I came from the financial services sector a few years ago, and we did that. We went through that mapping. It was coordinated by the Department of Treasury, which is the primary agency supporting financial services. And imagine a piece of paper that is 5 feet tall and 12 feet long, and tape that piece of paper to the wall. And that's exactly what we did. And on that paper was a mapping. Imagine circles and squares and triangles and rectangles, and each one of those shapes represented one element of the financial infrastructure. This triangle is all the big banks. This circle are the financial utilities. Over there, that square, that's the stock markets. And on and on. And in between are arrows and lines. And all of those arrows and lines are utilities. They are communications pathways that actually help conclude a transaction or any of the myriad ways that finance, global finance, is conducted each and every minute of every day, of every year. The same thing needs to happen in financial services. First, do that mapping, the plumbing, as we talked, but then the harder part is assigning the risk. Okay, let's look at that line between the circle and the square. Well, maybe the circle is the hospital and the square is the payer. And that line is Change Healthcare, because that is the communications path between the provider asking for a reimbursement and the payer who's supposed to send it back. Mm-hmm. What is the risk that line will be severed? That's a harder thing to do because it brings up questions, business proprietary questions about market share and about risk within Change Healthcare to begin with. Who wants to report about that? Right. That's the more difficult part. But if we had that map and we had risk assigned to each node in that plumbing, then we're going to have a better idea of what are the highest priorities, the highest risks or vulnerabilities. And then we can assign the right resources, the right attention, whether it's government attention, like providing some kind of public backup of a certain service, publicly funded backup, or whether it is a healthcare system that says, I don't want to be dependent solely on that line of communication. Maybe I better invest in a little redundancy. So that's what we need to get to now. It's going to take, it'll take time. It'll take a good couple of years, but I see on the, on the short to midterm horizon, a significant initiative between industry and government to make sure that that happens.
I want to see a picture of a 5 foot high document.
it was pretty impressive and daunting. It was almost like we were in a museum, we're right. Just standing there with our hands behind our backs, just examining the beauty of the architecture. And you go, oh my God, do I want to actually be the one responsible for securing all that?
Right. Is it fair to say that healthcare is behind some of the other critical infrastructure sectors when it comes to cyber? I mean, unlike financials, for example, which is kind of known as, bleeding edge with technology, and for obvious reasons, healthcare can't always do that, for whether it's a resource question or just kind of patient impact. I mean, are there places you'd like to see more rigor around cyber right now and then obviously grow that tomorrow?
Well, I would love to address that question to CISA, the Department of Homeland Security, because they're seeing all of the sectors and they can make that comparison. And I know they would not answer that question. I love all sure. my children equally, right? it's a multi-part answer. On the one hand, honestly, I don't know that there is any sector that is as motivated and prolific right now as the healthcare sector is, the Sector Coordinating Council, at least. And if we look at the Sector Coordinating Councils as the primary critical infrastructure representation of a given industry, then how many other Sector Coordinating Councils have published 27 best practices documents over the course of 6 years? So the motivation is there, and certainly the capability, I think, across the most resourced and mature healthcare organizations, maybe it's not second to none. I mean, the big banks can devote, $500 million per bank per year on cybersecurity. No such thing in the healthcare sector. But certainly there, some of the biggest health providers, medical device companies, pharmaceuticals, payers, they're putting a lot of resources and a lot of people behind this problem, behind this challenge. Where I'd like to see more, where we all would like to see more, is in the small to mid-sized, in the health provider space, we call them the underserved providers, the rural, critical access, the smalls, the clinics, FQHCs, Federal Qualified Health Centers, et cetera, those that are operating at zero or negative margins. And every day, they are operating in financial distress, certainly, or a financial sure. challenge. And then to overlay this cybersecurity imperative on them, and they have to make a decision between, should I hire that nurse or do I need to hire a security person? Those are hard existential questions to answer, decisions to make. Mm-hmm. So we can't just say, well, they're being negligent. Many of these small health systems know that they've got a problem, and many of them know what needs to be done. They just can't afford it. Right. And if there is going to be more regulation, as we are going to see from the government, from HHS, we're going to see more accountability required of healthcare providers to comply with certain cybersecurity requirements. Then our call back is to say, well, show me the money. If you're going to require more cybersecurity accountability, more compliance, then government, you need to be able to help these organizations actually comply. Is that grants? Is that incentives or subsidies, technical support? What is it? But you need to think very critically And very creatively about that. And so we're going to be helping the government do that. We are actually standing up an underserved provider cybersecurity task group to hear from the C-suite of some of these small underserved organizations, mm-hmm. how they think about cybersecurity, what their prioritization of decision-making is, and how do we, what would be useful or persuasive to them or incentivizing for them to do the necessary investments to strengthen their security,
right,
and redundancy. So we're going to be kicking that off shortly. And, you know, and a number of these smaller providers will say, yeah, actually regulation, it's good. Because if you don't tell us to do it, we're not going to do it. We have other things we have to do by regulation. It would be better if we could be more cyber secure. But again, we have to make those trade-offs. So government help relieve some of the stress related to those trade-offs. And then maybe a rising tide will lift all boats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, between money and, you know, skilled security folks doing the job, it seems like that's a pretty big systemic weakness there that needs to be resolved, especially for smaller organizations like
it is. It is. And, you know, but there are ways around it. Sometimes, you know, if you're really a small organization, maybe you don't need to hire a person, but you need to have some support, and that's, you know, outsourced managed security providers. Just sort of speculating, what could the government provide some kind of a cyber core service that they would outsource, you know, some of the better cybersecurity managed service providers to provide free support to those underserved providers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways to do this, but regulation alone, not going to do it. That's just not going to do it. You're just going to add one more straw on that camel's back.
All right, before we wrap up, I want to spend a few minutes talking about the 5-year strategic plan that we kind of mentioned at the outset, and I will provide a link to it here in the show notes for the listener. The plan is structured, laying out key trends around cybersecurity, some of the cybersecurity goals for the sector, objectives that need to be achieved in order to meet those goals. Also lays out some measurable outcomes, which is pretty cool. I was looking through that section as well. It's only been public a relatively short amount of time. Just curious what kind of feedback you're getting on it. How's it been received? Have you gotten constructive criticism on it?
Not a lot of constructive criticism because of the process that we went through. It was 18 to 20 months of very concerted, a whole series of in-person and virtual sessions among all the senior leaders in our membership. Almost 200 executives participated in this over that period of time. So there's pretty strong consensus about how this is laid out and what is being asked of the industry. What has surprised me is how several organizations have already said, yep, we're doing it. We are already working on, say, goal number 10. Actually, goal number 9, I've just talked with an organization who just said, yep, we are beginning to put that in place at a national scale. Mm-hmm. That to me is music. It means they are taking it seriously. They see how these goals can be applied to actual resource allocation, strategic vision, tactical implementation. And that's exactly what we are asking. That, you know, you look at these 10 goals, and these goals are written in the present tense as an end state. In other words, these goals are written in the present tense as it is in the year 2029. It's our 5-year strategic plan. And then the 12 objectives those are the implementing objectives. Those are the objectives that will implement to help achieve the goals. So the goals are what is, and the objectives are what to do. And, you know, and the way they map is provides a sort of connect the dots for any organization to say, well, how do I fit into this? Which mm-hmm. of these goals is something that we can take inside our organization? And then what are the actual objectives that would help us succeed in achieving that goal? So it's a fairly elegant, not complicated, and certainly digestible strategic plan that can be applied at the micro level on an enterprise by enterprise way, and at the macro level at a national scale. And you know, you mentioned the measurable outcomes. You know, those measurable outcomes in the strategic plan, those are suggested or illustrative, but we actually, probably within a couple of months, we will stand up a metrics task group or a measurement task group to say, mm-hmm. let's really get to the meat here. Let's get down to the short hairs of these questions. Let us establish for each goal what are a true measurable outcomes, and then B, what are the actual measures? Let's shoot for the moon on some of these things. Like,
right.
You know, a measure. Here's a measure. 90% of all hospitals, of all surveyed hospitals, 90% are implementing the NIST cybersecurity framework or the health industry cybersecurity practices. 90%. Okay, 90%. Oh, now that's ambitious. Now, how are we going to get there? How are we going to do that? So that is a measurable outcome. And I just use that as an illustration. I don't know if that's what it's going to be, but we need to get to specific numbers, something at the end of the day we can actually measure it and say, we got there. Well, we got 80% of the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. So no. That's what we have to do. And that's the next phase of this.
Right. I really liked the trends section and kind of, you know, where it seems the healthcare sector is going in the next 5 years. And it, you know, it talks about disruptive technologies and the need for resources, but it was the at-home aspect of healthcare that really kind of caught my attention. At-home testing, at-home care, because HDOs, now they're going to figure out how to work safely with networks they might not even control necessarily, and as well as a patient's understanding of technology and privacy and so forth. That's going to be interesting to watch, because I think it's inevitable that a lot of stuff is going to have to happen remotely.
Yeah, that's, you know, that is the constant tension between innovation and security. Hospital at home, what a wonderful thing.
Sure.
In concept and reality, it is based on the notion that more and more patients are going to be able to take into their own hands their own healthcare, and to do it in an environment that is comfortable and personal. And it's a wonderful, it's not just an idea, it's a reality. It is happening now. I've talked with any number of hospital systems that are doing that. And it's a big investment to do it. On the other, down the hall is the CISO who's going, oh my God, okay. So here's all of these additional assets and connection points and nodes in the network that they are going to be responsible for securing when they don't have ultimate control over those assets and connect points. It makes, you know, it makes for a lot of sleepless nights, I would imagine.
Sure.
So you have to find that balance between innovation and convenience and creativity to better serve your market, like hospital at home or wearable and implantable devices, and the need to secure them. So this is again not just in the healthcare industry, but in many other, particularly consumer-facing technologies or infrastructures that are trying to bring innovation and convenience to the user.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's so that is what we have to be prepared for in 2029. It's starting right now, and it's going to be more pervasive 5 years from now. How are we going to architect that as a matter of security?
And so just to wrap up and tying it kind of back to Change Healthcare and what needs to happen, I mean, it seems to be that what we're dancing around is resilience and, you know, designing and securing systems that need to just kind of withstand attacks like this. Just what does it mean to you in terms of healthcare cybersecurity? That I hate it that it's becoming a cliche, but resilience kind of really does tell a good story.
Well, you know, I look at resilience as a multifaceted thing. And I look at the strategic plan has the 2029 target future state. And I like to say, it's a bizarre thought, but an alien comes down to Earth and is asked to report back to the mothership about what is the state of healthcare cybersecurity in the United States. And they're gonna find six things in 2029, which represents our success. And number one, that security is reflexive. Boss, everyone's thinking about security, just the way they lock their door and at night and put in their seatbelt when they get behind the car. It is reflexive. Secondly, is everything is secure by design and by default. It's just built in. It's not bolted on, it's built in. And that is part of the ethos of technology, innovation, and manufacturing. The third is C-suite ownership. So every organization has a big boss for the most part. But the big boss always thinks that security belongs to just the security person. No, it belongs to the whole enterprise. It is one significant component of enterprise risk. And it better, and the CEO better know this, and the C-suite up to the board. That's number three. Number four is the small guys aren't going to be left behind. A cyber safety net. You know, we know there are the haves and the have-nots. There's the target rich and the cyber poor. How are we going to protect them as well so that the ecosystem doesn't have so many leaks in it? And right. the fifth one. Is cyber competence. It's just, it's workforce. It's sort of like the first one, reflexive cyber, but everybody is trained on the basics. The nurse, the surgeon, the CEO, they know that they have a piece to this as well. They know what to do and what not to do. And then finally, a 911 cyber civil defense. Boss, they are reflexive. They are like a beehive. When an intruder comes into the hive, they all communicate instantly and attack the intruder, or call it a cyber FEMA, if you will. But there is a fast, reactive, and comprehensive reaction and incident response and business continuity. So those six elements, I think, make up resiliency, because resiliency is before the boom. You mean you're prepared for the boom. And resiliency is after the boom. It's like when it does happen, it's not if, it's when it does happen. You're prepared, you're going to recover quickly.
Yeah, I don't think we talk about recovery enough when we talk about cybersecurity. It's always explaining the problem and, you know, even blaming the victim, unfortunately, in some cases. But recovery kind of gets forgotten. And
I agree.
I'm glad we're talking about it.
Yeah.
All right, Greg, I think that's a great place to leave it. I want to thank you so much. I think it's been a great conversation, and I really appreciate the time you gave me, and I think we should definitely do another one of these down the road sometime.
Absolutely. I appreciate all the good questions. They're thought-provoking, and I think if we're all of the hive mindset, we'll get beyond these big challenges.
Yep, I agree. All right, man. Thank you very much. Have a great night.
You too, Michael.